Well, pleasing everybody around the table these days isn't as easy as you might think sometimes. And I've had some trouble finding meals that are going to make everybody happy. And maybe you have as well. Larry Mueller here again. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. As we take a look at Dinner Solved, that's the title of a new cookbook out as a cookbook that has over 100 recipes that you can adapt to meet the needs of all of your guests. Dinner Solved, it features many options for each recipe to adapt to each person's taste. And the author is Katie Workman. And she's the author not only of Dinner Solved, but also the Mom 100 Cookbook, founding editor-in-chief of Cookster.com, and a regular contributor to NPR. She also posts regularly on her blog, themom100.com. And Katie, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be with you.
Well, I tell you what, I love your book. I'm really enjoying your book. I'm one of these people who loves cookbooks. And so I've got, I don't know how many cookbooks I've got. I've got a library full. And I particularly like cookbooks like yours that have great photos to go along with the recipes.
Yeah, photos are, I mean, it's always lovely to know what the dish is supposed to look like. And the photographer, Todd Coleman, who's a great friend of mine, he's extraordinary. We've worked together on two books, and I think the world of him.
Well, I tell you what, you and he have done a wonderful job, and This particular book, well, first let's go back. How did you decide to write cooking books? You were doing a lot of other things. You were a longtime editor for Workman Publishing.
Actually, I was an editor at Random House for a long time, and I did have a stint at Workman as associate publisher. But, yeah, I started as a cookbook editor, which I loved. And I've always loved cookbooks. Like you, I have a huge collection, and I used to read them when I was a kid. Just like they were books. I just read them. I loved the voice. I loved just, you know, reading the head notes and the sidebars. And I really taught myself how to cook from cookbooks and cook my way through, you know, the Silver Palette when I was a kid and, you know, the Moosewood collections. And, you know, I taught myself how to make pasta from Marcella Hazan. And I really just loved it. And it's sort of one thing led to another. I went into the world of online recipe publishing at Cookster.com. But, you know, at the time I always cooked. I just cooked all the time, all my life. And then I started writing. When I was at Cookster, I started doing a lot more writing about food. And it was at that point that the longtime cookbook editor at Workman Publishing, who's published cookbooks from the Silver Palette, Stephen Reichlin's books, Cake Mix Doctor, she's one of the great cookbook editors of all time, and she called me up, asked me to lunch, and said, I think it's time for you to write a book. And it's like when a really good coach says, you know, like, get in the game, you just say, yes, ma'am.
Well, this book is different, I think, from your first, for the Mom 100 book, in the sense that all the recipes in this book, Dinner Solved, are open for adaptation.
And so we
have many different options for your recipes.
That's right. The first book, there were a lot of opportunities to adapt recipes, but about a quarter of the recipes had an element that I call the fork in the road, and that means that you can make the recipe up to a certain point and then go in two directions. So you might separate part of it out and leave it plain and simple, or maybe you have somebody in your family who's spice-averse and the rest of you like things hot. Or maybe there's a vegetarian at the table. So the idea is that you can make a recipe up to a certain point and then go in two different directions. So you end up with more than one version of the same recipe. In essence, you're all eating the same thing, but everyone's getting the version that makes them happy. And the person at the stove doesn't feel like a short order cook. So that was something I developed in the Mom 100 cookbook, but Dinner Solved, as you correctly pointed out, all of the recipes have the fork in the road.
Katie Workman, our guest today, she is, again, the author of Dinner Solved, 100 Ingenious Recipes That Make the Whole Family Happy, including you. Join in with your questions or comments. You have some experiences with picky eaters, or how do you resolve those kinds of things? Are you interested in some family friendly, adaptable recipes for breakfast or lunch or dinner or even more? Join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and you can post your questions or your comments there. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And I'm wondering about just getting out of the I don't know if it's a rut of having the basics every week. You got spaghetti, you got pork chops, you got tacos.
Right. Well, there's definitely so many people find themselves in a rut. And I, by the way, I have to take a moment to say, if it sounds like the ceiling is about to fall on my head, there's construction that just started outside. And, in fact, the ceiling may be about to fall on my head, but unless I'm really critically injured, I will continue to speak with you.
But I wondered about that.
Yes, I just, of course, because, you know, why wouldn't they start major construction when you have an interview that's really important? So I think that I just want to point out, if it sounds like somebody is, you know, sawing their way through some drywall, I think they are actually sawing their way through drywall. So forgive me.
That's all right.
The rut thing, we all hear about this so many times, and we all find ourselves gravitating to recipes that, you know, maybe at one point we liked and maybe we still like them. But when you're looking at that package of chicken breasts and you're sighing and feeling like, oh, am I really going to do that same thing? It is time to shake yourself out of it. And, you know, obviously I hope that people will find new ways to feel energized in the kitchen from dinner solved. And one of the things that I really can't recommend enough is, if you have kids, get them into the kitchen with you. Not only is it good for them, it will help you break out of your rut. You can just hand them a copy of a cookbook or a great food magazine and say, okay, Billy, what do you think we should have for dinner Thursday night? You're in charge. Thursday night's your night. And if it's a little kid, obviously they'll pick the recipe and you'll help them all the way through. If it's an older kid, they might be able to make a shopping list and participate in the cooking. But having your kids in the kitchen isn't just a good way to, you know, teach them math skills and teach them the life skills of knowing how to cook for themselves. It's also a way to get them to try more things, because kids will try things when they've had a chance, when they've participated in the making of them. And even more than that, if they've had decision-making power. So when you read something and it says, you know, add 1 to 2 tablespoons of chili powder, that's when you turn to your kid and say, okay, it's all you. You add it. Start with a tablespoon, and you taste it, and you tell me when you think it's spicy enough. Suddenly, A, they're tasting food that they might not normally have tried. And also, when that chili is served up at dinner and people are like, this is really good, you know, you have that. Your kid gets to take the credit for it. Your kid gets pride of ownership. So in so many ways, that helps you snap out of your rut. It helps, you know, you let them, by letting them make these choices, you're giving them some control. And kids really don't have all that much control when you think about it. Go to school, do your homework, pick up your room, and now, you know, come dinner time, plunk down a plate of food and say, you know, okay, eat this. But maybe we can turn that around a little bit and make them more of a participant and less of a receiver.
I like that idea a lot. You say there's one. Some people now say, well, stay away from the salt and the fat when you're cooking. But you say those things are necessary.
They are necessary. And obviously, if you're watching your weight or it's got dietary issues, you know, you may have to think about it in a different way. But the truth is, when you are preparing food in your own kitchen, even if you're adding a couple tablespoons of olive oil or what looks like a generous amount of salt, it's probably so much less than the salt and the fat content of packaged foods. You're already probably so far ahead of the game, and salt elevates flavor. Even in baked goods, if you've ever made brownies, a batch of brownies with no salt and then a batch of brownies with salt, and you're wondering why the other ones taste so much richer and more chocolatey, the salt bumps up the flavor. And that's true of all cooking. And fat is not only adds flavor, but it adds good texture. It makes you feel satisfied and fuller longer. And it also is a conductor of other flavors. Fat helps emphasize other flavors and sort of carries them through the dish. So, you know, especially there's certain dishes you'll add a little bit of fat even at the end of it, a drizzle of olive oil, or maybe if you're making a rice dish, you'll add a pat of butter at the end. It's just a tiny bit of extra richness and velvetiness that makes a huge difference. And when you divide it by six or however many the recipe serves, you're really not doing yourself much harm. It's worth it.
You are absolutely right about that. I agree with you 100%. Well, you have so many good recipes, and I'm looking. And maybe, you know what, take a minute and talk about how your book's organized. Let's do that.
Sure. Well, Dinner Solved, going backwards, I guess, the Mom 100 was organized by dilemma, in essence, because I took 20 dilemmas that every parent faces day in, day out. The dilemma of, you know, I need to get my kids to try different fish dishes, or I wish I could get more vegetables on the table, or your kid has come home and said, oh, guess what, there's a bake sale tomorrow, and I signed you up to make chocolate chip cookies. And, you know, as a parent, you sort of like, you know, clap your hand against your forehead and think, oh, gosh. But so every section of the Mom 100 cookbook was meant to address, to provide solutions for these cooking for kids dilemmas that we face every day. And then for Dinner Solved, again, I took the notion of the fork in the road, and that was the sort of the emphasis, the whole idea being that you really don't want to feel like a short order cook, but when you have, you know, a gathering of people, whether it's your family or guests, and this one doesn't like spice and this one doesn't eat meat, you want to be able to make one dish and have it be flexible so that you can address everybody's issues with one recipe. And so the organization of Dinner Solved, again, it's pretty classically organized: appetizers, lunch, snacks. It's not just dinner, even though dinner is for many people sort of the main, you know, the lightning rod issue of the day, you know, but there's side dishes, there's pastas, there's vegetables, there's, you know, cookies, there's other desserts, and of course there's seafood and meat and chicken and comfort food. There's a chapter called I Need a Big Fat Hug Food, and there's just, you know, almost all of the recipes, even when they're international in flavor and even when they meet introduce some newer ingredients, they're all geared to be comfort food, because that's what we want when we're cooking at home. We really want food that makes us feel good, that makes us feel loved, that isn't, you know, if we want to be culinarily challenged, most of us, you know, do that at a restaurant a few times a year. You go out, you have an extraordinary experience, and when you go home, you really want food that makes you feel happy and comforted and loved.
Well, I certainly agree with that. And I'm going to tell a quick story here. We need to take a break for the news, but there's a bar, a craft brewery in town that also serves food, and their appetizer. I opened your book to deviled eggs, five waves.
And there you go.
They serve deviled eggs as an appetizer in this kind of sports bar brew pub, and they serve it five different ways.
Uh-huh.
And I'm looking at these, and I'm thinking, man, this looks like they borrowed them from your cookbook. They're wonderful. And so I definitely want to talk with you about those, Katie, but we need to take a quick break. You can join in. Questions, comments, some experiences to share, call us 800-642-1234. We'll be back with Katie Workman right after this look at the news. Well, breakfast, lunch, dinner can all become monotonous if you're eating kind of the same thing every week and maybe even every day the same thing. But there's a way to add more flavor to your meals and to make your meals a little different. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Our guest has some methods for swapping ingredients or adding more or less of something can completely alter a dish, and that's exactly what Katie Workman teaches in her new cookbook. It's called Dinner Solved, 100 Ingenious Recipes That Make the Whole Family Happy, Including You. She's also the author of the Mom 100 Cookbook and founding editor-in-chief of Cookster.com. and a regular contributor to NPR. Also posts regularly on her blog, themom100.com. And Katie, thanks again for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. So lovely to talk with you.
Well, it's so much fun. I love talking about food anyway. And I was, at the break, I mentioned the deviled egg recipes that you have in your book and how enticing they look. And who doesn't love deviled eggs?
I always say that it's impossible to be in a bad mood around a deviled egg, and even like the most cool, sophisticated people, it would be like being grouchy around like a puppy or a rainbow. You'd just be a bad person.
Well, if you go somewhere and there's appetizers out, and there's deviled eggs are almost always the first to go.
I'll tell you, I have been to, and I'm sure you have too. I have cooked for and I have attended thousands of parties in my life, and if there's anything that ever will go before the shrimp cocktail, the deviled eggs, or the pigs in a blanket, I have yet to find it.
You're exactly right. And you have a goat cheese chive and jalapeno deviled eggs, lemon capers and chives deviled eggs, avocado and bacon, and then, of course, the classic, and even a Middle Eastern.
Yeah, the Middle Eastern, they're all so easy because you're really, all you do is you take the yolks, you mash them up with some mayonnaise and a little bit of onion shallot, touch of mustard, and then you can do whatever you want after that. And the Middle Eastern ones have a little bit of an herb called za'atar, which is a really cool herb that's just available, in the spice aisle of your supermarket. And it's got this like nice grassy kind of nutty flavor, and it's made from thyme, sumac, and sesame seeds usually. And then you just add a pinch of that and a little bit of cumin, and you could sprinkle some sesame seeds on top if you're getting fancy.
And to go along with it, again, with your idea here in your book, you can alter these slightly to appeal to pretty much anybody.
Yeah, exactly. So if you wanted to make, the classic one, or, say you wanted to make the goat cheese and chive ones, you could make the filling with, you're just mashing in some chives and some goat cheese right into the eggs, but you could sprinkle some more goat cheese on some of them if people want a stronger flavor, or you could sprinkle on a few minced jalapenos on top. And again, the jalapenos will sort of announce themselves, so anybody who's not looking for a little pop of heat would avoid them, but the people who love a little spice with their deviled eggs would grab those.
We had a Facebook comment from Jenny who, what did she say here? She said, talking about about picky eaters. And she said, I think it's important to communicate effectively with picky eaters. I'm one myself, she says, and I now know that I have texture problems. So
yes,
that cilantro tastes like soap to me, and that I use, this is another thing, and that I use smooth marinara to avoid the stewed tomatoes, and I substitute parsley for cilantro.
Yep. Well, the cilantro thing is it's an actual chemical issue. Some people have an enzyme in their taste buds, in their bodies, that reacts with cilantro, and it makes it taste really bad to them and very soapy. Other people don't have that enzyme, and they like the flavor of cilantro. So this is an actual physiological reaction, so it's not just somebody being picky. In terms of texture, there's definitely issues that people have with texture. A lot of kids have it. Sometimes people grow out of it. Sometimes they don't. But I think that Jenny's point about communicating is really critical, because on one hand, you had, especially in a prior generation, you had the parents who put down whatever it was that you were going to eat and did the "you're not getting up from this table until every last string bean is gone" thing. And that's one way to go, but it's not that much fun, certainly not fun for the kid. It sure isn't that much fun for the adult, and it usually doesn't have the desired effect of turning a kid into a string bean lover or a lima bean lover or Brussels sprouts or whatever it was that they were forced to watch congeal for 3 hours. And on the flip side, in this day and age, you have parents who say, "Oh, my kid's so picky, he won't eat anything. I just have to make him plain pasta every night." That doesn't feel like a great solution either, because how are you helping your kid to expand out of that? And, we teach our kids to read. We teach our kids to, be safe on the streets. We teach our kids all these things, and we have to really expand their horizons and show them, you know, the different flavors that are out there. And one thing that a lot of much more scientifically based savvy people than myself have noted is that when kids are exposed to a new flavor, if they're on the pickier side, they need to be offered this food 8, 10, maybe more times before that they'll embrace it. And it's really about repetition. It's trial and error. It's not making a huge deal about it every time. It's not sit down and you're going to eat that whole piece of fish. It's, can you please try this fish? No, I know you didn't like salmon before. I made it a different way. Just give it a shot. Did you like, oh, you, no? Okay. Well, we'll try it again. And that's it. Don't make everything a battlefield. Don't get into a battle of wills, because going back to the kids and control thing, they don't have control over all that much, but they sure do have control over what they're going to let pass over their lips. And forcing them to eat things is usually
not a good plan.
Not a good plan. Doesn't get us the results that we want.
Just to go along with what you were commenting on, we had an email from Barbara in Glenwood, Iowa. She said, about the age of 7, I was given a kid's cookbook, and looking at the recipes, I was down the path of loving to cook and to study books about cooking. I still have it. I'm now almost 70. I have 6 young grandchildren, and I do realize it is the age of internet recipe searches and so forth, but I try to be sure they're given a cookbook at an early age so they can be lovers of cooking at home. They all can experiment and have fun cooking.
Oh, I want to buy that lady a glass of wine. I love that. That's awesome. She's right, and she's and it really is. Again, it just goes back to when a kid feels like it's something of their choosing rather than something that's foisted upon them. It's just a whole different world for them.
I look. I mean, I opened up your book. Every time I open it up to a page, I think, oh God, I want to talk about that one with her. But there's one here, cheesy crispy pizza portobello mushrooms.
Yeah.
Oh, does it look good? Oh my
goodness.
I know,
goodness. And it's fun. They're fun. So these are basically mushrooms that are built on a pizza, and the portobellos are, you know, obviously, you know, the nice big size mushrooms available in every supermarket. You can buy the portobello caps, or you can just, you know, buy the mushrooms and take the stems out and just, you're just layering in some different cheeses and a little bit of panko breadcrumbs, which offer up a nice texture, because the mushrooms themselves, when you roast them, they get a little crispy around the edges, but of course they're quite tender. And these are a vegetarian dish, and if you have a vegetarian in the house, mushrooms are such a great ingredient for vegetarians to embrace, because, you know, they're in a lot of vegetarian foods. They're really good for you, and it's a great food. And you can also make the little ones. You can just make them with little regular cremini mushrooms or button mushrooms. So, and those are really cute, and little kids love bite size, you know, mm-hmm. adorable looking food.
Well, you know, and if kids didn't like mushrooms or were leery about them, looks so inviting.
Exactly. And, you know, that's such a good point, because if you have a food that you want to try to, you know, put on the list of foods that your kids like, and you're worried that they might be leery of them or that they haven't liked them in the past, match it up with something you know they like. In this case, it's pizza flavors, marinara sauce, mozzarella. You know, these are foods, ingredients that most kids love and are very familiar with. So it's a great sort of, you know, you don't want to put some, you know, really complex ingredients with mushrooms the first time you're introducing mushrooms to your kids. That's, you know, start, you know, pick one new thing at a time.
Anita in Lindenhurst, Illinois, up next. Anita, hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, I'm so enjoying this. When I was growing up, I was one of those kids that had to sit there until 9 o'clock at night until I finished it.
Wasn't fun, was it?
Well, you know what it does? It creates aversion.
Yeah.
And so
that's
I decided
right.
with my kids I was never going to do that. And I also did childcare in my home. And I noticed with kids, when you wanted them to try something they were unfamiliar with, they would do this little thing that made you think they might throw up. You know, it's like this, you know. And so
the gentle gagging noises.
Into that hassle. And what I decided to do with them was tell them, okay, you've never had this before. Try it and see if you like it. And if you really don't like it, we'll give you a napkin. You can spit it out. Because that made it acceptable. The thought of swallowing something really is, then they would do that thing like they were going to throw up.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah, and it really did work well to the point where my oldest son, I just found this out the other day, they do that with their daughter. If she doesn't like
it.
And this is a kid who will eat sushi. So, you know, there aren't that many things. But, you know, it's like you said, I thought that was so wise. Why create a battlefield over food?
It's true. And what you did was give a kid, you return the control back to them. And when they have the control, then suddenly they're more willing to try things. I've had so many times where, you know, oh, I don't want this and that. Oh, okay, well, I'm going to just add this to mine. And if you want a bite, let me know. And then suddenly they're interested again because you gave them the choice.
That's a good one.
I like that. Anita, thank
you. I like yours.
Yeah, Anita, thank you so much for calling. By the way, you can join in, too. Question, comment, experience to share. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show. You know, another page I opened up to, and I thought, oh, gosh, does that look good? Chicken vegetable pot pie casserole.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, does that look good? And what the
poor Larry's going to fall off his chair. It's too mean to do this to you around lunchtime.
I know it's lunchtime. You know that's one of the joys and sometimes the problems of doing a show at this hour of the day.
Right. Well, this casserole, which I love, there's the fork in the road here is that you can make a vegetarian version or you can make it with chicken, and it's called a pot pie casserole because I like to cook almost everything in copious amounts. We have people over to dinner all the time. My kids' friends are always over. Even though there's just four of us in our family, the table is usually set for more, and you never know who's going to wander in. And also, I happen to love leftovers, so I rarely make things in just the amounts I need. So this is made in an enormous skillet, and the crust is sort of plunked on top, and you don't have to fuss around with the bottom pie crust layer. Which makes some people nervous, and you make this great hodgepodge of vegetables, and you can flip in and out vegetables according to whatever's in season. You know, this one has, you know, the potatoes and the carrots and broccoli and peas and corn, but you can add mushrooms, you can add asparagus if it's spring, or you spinach, or in the summer you could put in eggplant or tomatoes, and you make this very nice, very lightly creamy broth base, and you have all your vegetables in there. And if you have vegetarian at the table, you might take half of it out and put it in a smaller skillet, and then add the chicken to the main part.
Sure.
And just top them both with some. I use store bought pie crust all the time. Love those roll out pie crusts. Love them. I'm not shy about convenient products that I think are good and that are helpful. And anything that makes a difference between me getting dinner on the table and me not getting dinner on the table, you know, within reason, is a friend of mine.
Do you have, Becca wonders, do you have an easy meal for college students in your book?
It's funny. I actually get emails from college students and from parents of college students or kids who are sort of going out on their own for the first time, whether it's college or, you know, moving into a new apartment for the first time. And they do really like things. In the Mom 100, there is a fresh mozzarella pasta casserole that has like five ingredients, and just anybody can make it. It seems sophisticated in the end. It's easy. It's inexpensive. It's fast. It's just a great recipe. And in the first book, in Dinner Solves, rather, the second book, Sloppy Joes, I've been getting emails about Sloppy Joes. I have a couple of really simple meatball recipes. There's the maple barbecue pork meatballs. There's the easy cheesy chicken parmesan meatballs. There's Thai chicken stir fry. There's a recipe for doing Asian rice bowls where you just make up a whole bunch of rice, and then you can make a variety of different things to put on top of it, or it's a great way to use up leftovers. If you have leftover orange chicken, another easy recipe, by the way, it's like just simple stir fry, lightly sweet. You just take out those leftovers, steam a little bit of broccoli, maybe put a little squirt of hot sauce on it, maybe a spoonful of hoisin sauce or soy sauce, and you can just put out rice and let everyone top their own rice bowls however they want. And it's a nice way to get a group of people together for people who are entertaining for the first time.
And, you know, I'm looking and for a kind of a fancier meal for maybe a college student, or at least one that looks really fancy, is the pork chop. Oh, my goodness, does that look good.
It's beautiful.
Sliced lemons, they caramelize them.
Okay, so here's the thing about this is pork chops can often be really inexpensive. You make a very simple spice blend with, like, smoked paprika and cumin, just a handful of very easy everyday spices. Rub the spices on the pork loin, on the pork chops, rather. And then this is the fork in the road. Say you have a kid who you don't think is going to, like, love a really full-flavored pork chop. Take a pinch of the spice rub it on the pork chop. That kid's going to have a very mildly seasoned pork chop, maybe be introduced to a couple new flavors. You, as the adult, are going to have a great full-flavored Spanish pork chop. And then as you're sautéing them up in the pan, you put a slice of lemon on the pork chop, which caramelizes up in the hot pan, and it makes it look like something that you got at a restaurant.
Yeah, it really looks great.
And
that's what I want to try.
I would say 20 minutes start to finish.
Yeah, that's the other beauty of it, 20 minutes start to finish. And you mentioned Sloppy Joe's, and I looked at, because I have to say I love Sloppy Joe's. I don't know. You know, I like going to fancy restaurants, and I enjoy a well-prepared meal. And I like Sloppy Joe's.
Right.
Just about as much, sometimes just as much.
Right. I mean, really, we all love our burgers. We all love our Sloppy Joe's. We all love our meatballs. You know, it's like we all love our chicken pot pies. I mean, this is the kind of food that makes you feel, you know, at the end of a long day, like you have landed in the right place. And the Sloppy Joe's, again, you make the sauce, really simple sauce, you know, with ketchup and onions and garlic and some mustard powder, a little sugar and chili powder. You make up the sauce. If you have a vegetarian in the family, separate out some of the sauce and add some crumbled tofu to it, some tempeh, which is a pressed tofu. Mm-hmm. And then to the main pot, for the meat eaters, you add some sautéed ground beef. And now, there's some recipes in the book people have said to me, vegetarians have said, I never thought I'd have a Sloppy Joe again, or I never thought I'd have a crab cake again. And the crab cakes, by the way, you can make vegetarian with canned hearts of palm. So
oh,
it's fun.
I didn't see that. I haven't seen that one yet.
It's like it's the same. It has the same texture. The flavor goes perfectly with all of the crab cake seasonings. It holds together just the way a crab cake does. And it looks so much like the crab cake that you have to label the two platters because it really, the two of them are so, they look exactly the same. And so it's fun to take a recipe that is not normally vegetarian friendly and try to give it a vegetarian twist. I have, my sister's vegetarian, her kids are vegetarian, my babysitter for a while was vegetarian, my mother is a vegetarian. So I'm always looking for ways to try to make something that they might be feeling like they're missing and take something and make it a vegetarian version.
Well, you know, we haven't talked, there's a few things we haven't, or areas that we haven't touched on. You do a ricotta berry breakfast crostini right off the bat. That sounds pretty darn good.
So crostini, most of us think about as appetizers. It's basically Italian toast. The larger ones can be called bruschetta. You see them on restaurant menus. And essentially, it's just a piece of toast with the topping on it. And they're usually savory, and they're usually served as appetizers. But, I mean, of course, toast is a breakfast food, right? So why not think about that? So the two versions of the fork in the road versions of the breakfast crostini is you make up your little toast, just slice up a baguette. You take some ricotta cheese and add a little bit of honey to sweeten it, spread it on the toast, and then just put some sliced strawberries or other berries on top. And it's a delicious way to start your day. And if you want something on the more savory side, put some fresh mozzarella on the toast. Just give them a little brush of olive oil, sprinkle of salt, slice of fresh mozzarella, slice of prosciutto or some other ham.
It's wonderful. On the other end, I just wanted to mention, you also have carrot cupcakes, chocolate cream cheese with a chocolate cream cheese frosting.
Mm-hmm.
That, what a nice dessert. And what a...
Those are good. And the sneaky thing there, so if you make the carrot muffins and don't frost them, then they're carrot muffins. And when you frost them, then they're carrot cupcakes. It's all in the language.
Oh, boy, this has been so much fun. How's the book doing, by the way? I hope it's doing well.
It's doing really well. It's just been out for a month, and sales are nice, and publicity has been great, and people have been very warm in their reception of it.
Well, I can see why. It's really, I'm taking it home, and I don't know that I'll start on page one, but I'll probably just open it up and say, okay, that looks good. I'm going to go there. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us, Katie. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it was a pleasure. I really enjoyed being on your show. Thank you.
Katie Workman, the author of the Mom 100 cookbook, and then the one we talked about today, Dinner Solved, 100 Ingenious Recipes That Make the Whole Family Happy, Including You. And right on the cover, some shrimp Alfredo pasta, two different ways how to do that. Oh, gosh, it was a lot of fun talking with her, and really great to have you listening in as well. Just to let you know, tomorrow at 11 o'clock, we're talking with author Jerry Apps. Jerry comes by every time he has a new book out. And here's another one on Wisconsin agriculture, so we'll talk with him about that. Then at 11:45, we're talking about some new paddling technologies. So look forward to that as well. Thank you for listening, and please do stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.